And joining us today is award-winning author, journalist Gregory Zuckerman. Gregory is the author of the recently released book, A Shot to Save the World, the inside story of the life or death race for COVID-19 vaccine. Let me tell you a little bit about Gregory before we get started. He is the author of The Man Who Solved the Market, The Frackers, and The Greatest Trade Ever. He's a special writer and investigative reporter at The Wall Street Journal. He writes about business, economics, and investing topics. He is a three-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award, the highest honor in business journalism. Zuckerman also appears regularly on CNBC, Fox Business, and other networks and radio stations around the globe. Gregory, thank you so much for being with us here.
Great to be here.
Well, thank you very much. Now, let's talk a little bit about you're a business writer, and this is, of course, a science and business book that you just finished writing. But as far as your writing goes, were you always interested in writing about business and, stock market, financial things, scientific things?
As a kid, I was fascinated by the stock market. I was also just fascinated by companies and brands. I remember looking at the back of a Skippy peanut butter jar, and realizing that there's no Skippy Corporation. It was part of some conglomerate that had other brands. I just loved how they put it together. And yeah, then I started trading and losing all my money. So that was a good education. Luckily, I didn't have that much money to lose, and decided to write about it. So my passion is something I'm really fascinated by. And it's a blessing to be able to write about what I'm interested in.
And you sure know how to pick a peanut butter, I'm sure.
Very good. I've got a lot of experience. Yeah.
Now, at the beginning of this book, it starts off by you telling us that you were traveling with your two boys, and as you're traveling back, you hear about something that's happening in Wuhan, which we all remember now, but it didn't seem like a really big deal to you.
That's exactly right. For many of us, we were a little bit complacent, maybe even blasé about this new virus. I was flying around. My boys put on masks, but I took mine off. People were staring at us, made me uncomfortable. No one was really concerned. The fascinating aspect of it is maybe we weren't concerned, but the people I write about in my book, A Shot to Save the World, they were already getting nervous back in January 2020. They were getting literally scared, and they decided to do something about it. So we owe them a lot of gratitude.
So tell me a little bit about that fear, because the people who are inside and they know what's going on, they're a little bit afraid. And so if they're afraid, then we should have been afraid. What happened?
Yeah, so there are a group of scientists around this world who have been perfecting new cutting-edge vaccine approaches. One is using messenger RNA. We could talk about that if you like. And the other is adenovirus. And they said, you know what? Here's this new virus. It's going to be dangerous. It's going to spread. We need to step up. This is our chance to prove that our techniques work. And there are a bunch of fascinating characters in my book. I mean, there's a guy named Juan Andres, who's the head of manufacturing at Moderna. And in January, he's not really a scientist, more of a manufacturing specialist, but he started getting nervous. He told his family that trouble was coming. He bought toilet paper. He bought tissues. He bought a third refrigerator, and they thought he was nuts. And then, lo and behold, a month later, his mother-in-law passed away of COVID. And like the rest of us, they got concerned. So we owe, again, a lot of gratitude to these scientists and these executives and others who decide to throw everything at this virus and try to create a vaccine.
And the gentleman that you just mentioned, now, from what I read in the book, he was, well, not him, but Moderna in general, was running out of money. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. We don't necessarily always appreciate maybe the miracle of these vaccines, but it could have gone a very different way. Moderna was running out of money going into 2020. We're not talking, month living hand to mouth, month to month, but they were cutting back on expenses and they were getting concerned and the stock was down. And even as recently as 2020, they didn't have money to produce their vaccines. They had developed the vaccine. They thought it was effective, but they went to the government. They went to Merck. They went to the Gates Foundation. They couldn't get the money. So they ended up going to Wall Street, selling some shares. But had they not been able to sell the shares, I don't know if the Moderna vaccines would have been ready in time. So we have to be very thankful. It could have gone in a very different way, this pandemic and the vaccine effort.
Gregory, as far as the vaccine goes, we all knew that something was in the works. We were waiting, and then people were going like, come on, is this going to happen? But then when it did happen, some people were hesitant.
Yes, it's very frustrating that to me, but also to the vaccine researchers who've really gone all out. They're literally working 24/7 almost at a lot of these places to build us these vaccines, develop them. And the bulk of the population has embraced them, has taken them. But there are too many people that are wary of the vaccines. And some, I understand the concern. These vaccines were developed in 330 days last year before they were authorized. That's a remarkable speed. The average vaccine is developed in 10 years. But I think what you get from my book is that corners weren't cut. They developed these vaccine approaches over many years. Yes, they hadn't developed anything. They hadn't proved anything, but they thought they had an approach that would work. So it wasn't like they rushed it, and people need to be reassured, and I think they do after reading my book.
We're visiting with award-winning journalist and author Gregory Zuckerman. He is the author of the book, A Shot to Save the World, The Inside Story, The Life or Death Race for a COVID-19 Vaccine. At what point did you decide, Gregory, that this was interesting and perhaps you wanted to write a book about it?
I think it was in the spring of 2020. I didn't know yet that these vaccines would be effective. But what struck me is that the people that were at the lead, that were chasing these vaccines, were getting closer, were not who you would have expected. Again, this company, Moderna, for years they had worked on vaccines, they had worked on drugs, hadn't proved anything, they had nothing approved. People were suspicious of them. People thought they were exaggerating their capabilities. This company, BioNTech, it's in Germany. No one had heard of them either. And they're the ones who went ahead and worked with Pfizer. It's a bunch of really unlikely characters, unlikely companies. Even mRNA, people thought, wasn't going to work. Scientists, conventional wisdom in the world of science was, don't waste your time with mRNA. So I get fascinated with unlikely heroes. And you really see that in this episode, in the chase of the vaccines.
And, of course, now that we have vaccines, we have booster shots, you're starting to see a lot more people getting in line to get those shots. And I know you mentioned that you have boys, and the reason I bring that up is because now they're offering the vaccines for children 12 and under. What are your thoughts on that as a journalist?
So, again, I understand why some people are concerned. You've got your conspiracy theorists, and I don't really have patience there. You know, they put chips in us and all that kind of stuff. I kind of dismiss that as nonsense. But I do empathize with people that have some concerns. But I do have to say that the risks, and there are risks with the vaccine. Let's be clear. There's risks when you get in your car and you drive to the grocery store. We embrace risk. We have risk in almost everything we do in life. But the risks of the vaccines are so much lower than getting COVID. I mean, I've talked to people as part of the research for my book who have long COVID, who struggle, who are tired all the time and their brain is foggy. And I wouldn't wish it on anyone. So the risk of getting COVID and suffering, I'm not even talking about hospitalization and death. I'm just talking about long COVID. I want to avoid that. I would want my kids to avoid that. So those are all good reasons to take the vaccine.
You mentioned at the beginning of our interview that the head of Moderna, he had already started buying things, stockpiling different situations. And at here, at least in the United States, it seems like shortly after, like March, I guess, of 2020, in the spring, people started, I'm not sure if you want to call it panicking, but they started taking away stuff from the shelves. But most of the stuff that was going was water and toilet paper.
Yeah, listen, we've never gone through this before. It was a pandemic. It's been a century. And there were mistakes made along the way by everyone, by Fauci, by scientists, by the government. So I try to cut people a little bit of slack, the decision makers and others. They generally had our best interests in mind. They made some mistakes, some miscalculations. But in general, when it came to the vaccine effort, it's a positive story. I mean, that's what my book really is. You've read all the bad things that went on, what went wrong. My book is about what went right, and we have to really celebrate the vaccines and the people that created them, developed them.
And as you just mentioned, what things went right, but there were some situations, at least what you describe in your book, that some things could have gone wrong.
Oh, yeah. Once again, we need to be appreciative. I mean, BioNTech, they developed this vaccine early on in 2020, and they wanted to roll it out and introduce it to the world, and they contacted Pfizer. And one of the senior scientists at Pfizer I write about said, don't waste too much time on creating a vaccine, because this may not turn into a pandemic. This virus may dissipate, just sort of like the earlier coronaviruses did, and Zika and those kind of things. So luckily, BioNTech talked to a different scientist at Pfizer, and the rest is history. They worked together, but it wasn't a foregone conclusion that these vaccines would be effective as they are, or that these companies would even be able to work on them. So we need to be very appreciative. I mean, if this virus had emerged a few years ago, we weren't ready. So we're very lucky in many ways.
Let's talk a little bit about mRNA.
Sure. mRNA is a molecule. Messenger RNA is what the formal name of it is. And we all have it inside of us, naturally. It transports the instructions from the DNA to the part of the cell where proteins are created to keep us alive. And so we have mRNA inside of us, and we rely on it. And scientists always dreamed of creating mRNA in the lab. Well, what if we could synthesize this, create it in the lab, and inject it in us, and we could send any message we wanted to the body? We could have cells create any kind of proteins. And the idea was, well, maybe we could make our bodies into a vaccine or a drug lab or manufacturing plant kind of thing. But they worked on it for years. And mRNA is very unstable. It doesn't last long. So you know all those people that say, oh, I don't want mRNA inside me, it's going to change me. No, scientists never want to work with mRNA because it lasts such a short time. It's so short-lived. It's chopped up within moments by the cell's enzymes. But some scientists, they were very stubborn and persistent, and they said, yeah, we know all the drawbacks of mRNA, but we're going to figure out ways to get it in the body, get it into the cell. Then it'll be chopped up quickly, but we want it to get in there long enough so that it sends a message to the body. And in this case, the message is to create the spike protein. And that way we educate the body about the virus and the spike protein. And that's exactly what a vaccine is, an education for the immune system.
We are visiting with award-winning author, award-winning journalist Gregory Zuckerman. The book is A Shot to Save the World, the inside story of the life or death race for COVID-19 vaccine. You mentioned, the frustration making sure that, you know, people are going to say, well, I don't know if I want that. I'm not sure if I should do it, if it's safe, it's not. But if, as you just mentioned, if this had come a little bit before, things would have been in trouble, because the average vaccine in the book you describe, it takes about 10 years to make, except for mumps, which I think was 4 years.
Yep, that was a previous record, and this one is much quicker. And again, there's some reason for wariness, but at this point, it's been in over a billion arms around the world. I'm sorry, and I find it fascinating and perplexing. You know, you step on a nail, and you rush to the hospital and you get a tetanus shot. No one says, well, who developed the tetanus shot? Was it too fast, too slow? What's in the tetanus shot? And there's not a question. Or a drug. You know, people inject themselves left and right with fillers and all those kind of stuff with high incidence of side effects and things like that. But when it comes, for whatever reason, to this vaccine, which is 90-something percent effective and very, very few side effects, people have concerns. It's very perplexing.
I'm not sure if this is for all cases, but at least for me, I noticed this, that it seemed like during the pandemic and the search or the, you know, race for the vaccine, that people were looking at Israel and let's say, okay, let's see what they do.
Yeah, Israel's an interesting healthcare system. It's very electronic. You can track people very easily. There's universal health, and they got the vaccines very early. They acted quickly, but also Pfizer saw Israel as a bit of a testing ground, so we could track the effectiveness. So they were a step ahead of us in a lot of ways. There were times when Israel was not doing well, and we were in terms of COVID, but then we unfortunately got worse after that. They seemed to be like a half a step ahead, and they got the vaccine quite early.
What about some of the other variants that we've heard? Because we hear people who say, well, it doesn't matter if you get the vaccine because another variant is going to come along. But at the same time, as you just mentioned, you shouldn't buckle up your get in the car and buckle up, because you're going to have to unbuckle it when you get to the destination.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the vaccines are all proven very effective against all the strains, all the variants so far. Maybe not as effective, but in terms of what we care most about, hospitalization and death, they're still remarkably effective. And beautiful thing about mRNA is all you need is the sequence of a virus and you can create a new vaccine. So if we get to the point where this variant gets worse, there's another variant, they can go back in the lab and recreate a new vaccine and inject it. And people say, oh, well, geez, I don't want to get a vaccine all the time. I believe that eventually, we're talking in the next couple of years, you'll be able to go into the doctor's office and get a new COVID vaccine, but it'll be an all-in-one. There'll be other things like flu that they'll include in there, so it'll be less of a hassle.
You know, I'm sure that you've talked to people, interviewed people who say, well, you know, it's my choice and I live here. And we heard a lot of the stuff going on with the NFL about Adrian Rodgers and what happened with him and saying that he was immunized. And as you just mentioned, a lot of us didn't even think of getting a polio vaccine or some of the vaccinations for the mumps or the measles. And now it's like it's something that we do.
Yeah, listen, we're a country of individualists. I think that there's a reason why the bulk of the science that created these vaccines was in America. We're a country with ambitious people, and we don't like people telling us what to do. But the flip side is that I don't remember those people that say they won't take a vaccine, don't tell me what to do. I don't remember them saying, well, if I do get sick, I'm going to pay out of pocket and not rely on insurance and not use hospitals. So when it comes to healthcare, they seem to rely on others. But when it comes to vaccines, they're on their own, and I don't need any help, et cetera. You know, there's a lot of self in this country, self-actualization, self-this, self-that. It's about us. Not enough we. I mean, there is evidence that there are fewer. It's easier to transmit it if you're not vaccinated, so we need to care about each other. I just think it's really more important to think about others and not just about ourselves.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, Gregory, because we get a lot of, not complaints, but people will say, I'm not going to wear a mask. I'm going to the store. I've been vaccinated. Or I don't care. I'm not going to wear one. What did you? I'm sure you came across people like that when you were interviewing people about the vaccine.
Yep. Listen, I don't know why it's such a burden. I think it's more of a principle, perhaps, because wearing a mask, I don't know, just in a store, you're not wearing it at home, you're wearing it for a little bit or some public spot. I get it. It's an inconvenience, but is it that much of a reason to be angry and not comply with requests or vaccine mandates? And it's kind of frustrating. Masks are mostly so that you prevent it from spreading to others. So once again, we care about ourselves more than others. Yeah, fine. You don't think you're going to get sick. Okay. I don't use the healthcare system then. Don't use a hospital. And don't spread it to other people.
You mentioned the healthcare system and the hospitals. And we heard a lot about those people on the front lines, and those are the nurses and the doctors.
We did. And today, some of them are under fire. Can you imagine that they've been threatened? Health has been threatened by people who are so angry against vaccines. I don't know what it is. There's so much anger, I guess, underneath society. You scratch a little bit. You can disagree. And listen, people like Fauci and others, a lot of anger directed at them, and they've made mistakes. And I point to them sometimes in my book, and they are accountable. They say we made mistakes along the way, but I don't know. We're all human beings. We all make mistakes. And frankly, I've got friends who and others on the opposite side of the spectrum. It's important to sit with them and break bread with people and share thoughts and not have so much anger.
Well, I know as a journalist, we're supposed to remain objective, and you are in this book, but I'm wondering if this whole thing has, I'm pretty sure it is, it has become politicized.
Yep, everything in our society is politicized. A few years ago, I wrote a book. It's about the energy revolution in this country. It's called The Frackers, and it's about fracking. And I traveled the country, little towns in North Dakota, in Oklahoma, Louisiana, Texas, Pennsylvania. And I got to meet people that I otherwise wouldn't. And it was a blessing. And I just don't think we have enough of an opportunity to do so anymore. We're all in our bubbles. We talk to people that agree with us, generally speaking. We're on Facebook with people who agree. We're uncomfortable with people who disagree. And it's sad. So I think part of it is we just demonize each other. The left demonizes the right demonizes the left. I'm a sort of a moderate in the center, and it makes me sad.
Has the pandemic made that even worse?
It has, yeah. Given one more topic where people are emotional and they politicize things. And I feel that some people won't get vaccinated just because they don't want to give a victory to the other side as if it's the other side. I mean, again, for my book, I talk to all the people that work on these vaccines. They're Republicans. They're Democrats. They're independents. They're nothing. It's not, there's nothing political. There's no political about these vaccines. They were developed under President Trump. President Trump, in Operation Warp Speed, provided useful, crucial resources, money, financing, backing for all these vaccines. These are the products of the Trump administration. So it's confounding to me why it's become politicized.
We are visiting with Gregory Zuckerman. Gregory is the author of the book, A Shot to Save the World, the inside story of the life or death race for a COVID-19 vaccine. Now, you write in your book about some of the things that you just mentioned, whether some people believe it or not. And you mentioned about, you know, some scientists at Oxford who weren't totally convinced that this virus was real.
Well, they were convinced it was real, but they
weren't a threat
early on that it was, that it would spread, there would be a pandemic. And many of the people, it took a little convincing. Yeah, within Oxford University, there was a young scientist who told his bosses, no, this is going to get bad. It's going to overwhelm our healthcare system. He was a little more familiar with their healthcare system because he was formerly a doctor. And eventually he convinced his superiors, and I write about it in the book, and they switched gears and focused on a vaccine and developed one that's pretty effective. It's not in America. It's the AstraZeneca vaccine with Oxford. But around the globe, it's very helpful. It's cheap. It's inexpensive. It doesn't have to be kept at cold temperatures, so it saves a lot of lives.
Because, as your book says, implies the subtitle, The Inside Story of the Life or Death Race for a COVID-19 Vaccine, at what point did you decide, Gregory, okay, I have to finish this now?
So I tracked the work throughout 2020 and tried to get inside, and eventually I did. So these groups talked to the researchers, the scientists, the people responsible for the work, both in the government labs but also privately. And come the fall, in the fall, I was very optimistic, and then the results were just remarkable. 95% or so effectiveness. That was before the Delta variant, but still ridiculously high effectiveness. And then I said, this is mankind's, or at least modern scientists' greatest achievement. There's nothing that compares to it. I think we're a little too close to it right now to appreciate, but in time we will realize, and we're going to look back on this achievement. And I wanted to chronicle this remarkable scientific and financial even achievement, because I think for history it'll be important.
So tell us a little bit about, because you are a business writer, you're a business journalist, and you talked earlier about the head of Moderna and how he was buying supplies for his family. A lot of people now are talking about the supply chain and how we may or may not have something for the holidays. What can you tell us about that because of the pandemic?
Yeah, well, we had become reliant on sort of just-in-time delivery, where things wouldn't sit around forever. You'd get them just in time and within days. And in some ways, we've been sort of addicted to this, or complacent about it and relying on it. And it's proven there's just not the workforce due to the pandemic. Some people are not comfortable coming back to work for various reasons. There's a surge of demand, but there isn't enough supply because we've been shut in, and some of these factories and others haven't been able to, the ports, get enough employees. So yeah, everything is slowed. I'm seeing it myself, my personal life. There's things that I'm waiting on. So it's a challenge, but you know what? We've got our health and we need to appreciate that. And that's a year ago or early mid of 2020, we were scared about our health. So we do have to be appreciative of where we are.
We're visiting with award-winning journalist and author Gregory Zuckerman. Greg is the author of the book, A Shot to Save the World, The Inside Story of the Life or Death Race for a COVID-19 Vaccine. So we've heard of Moderna, we've heard of Pfizer. Were there some companies that perhaps were in that race and didn't make it or fell short?
Interesting thing is how the vaccine giants didn't step up. I mean, Merck is the one who is responsible for the MMR vaccine we give our kids, measles, mumps, rubella, Sanofi, GSK. Those are the vaccine giants. Pfizer is not. And these other companies I write about, BioNTech, Moderna, Novavax, they're relatively small efforts. So it is really surprising that these are the companies and scientists who saved us, and the experts didn't. So the experts, they tried. Some of them tried and failed, or they didn't put 100% into it. And yet you have a little company like Novavax, which is going into 2020, they only had about a few months left of cash. They were going to go bankrupt. The stock was about $2, $3 a share. They never, ever developed an effective or approved vaccine or a drug of any kind. And yet, in the next few months, I think they're going to be approved. And we don't really need them in the West, but elsewhere in the world, we really do. And it's a very effective vaccine. So it is striking who it is that stepped up, the unsung and unlikely heroes. And they're the stars of my book.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because we heard a lot in the early ongoings, of course, of China and then Vietnam. But then we heard how cases were just, you know, spiking in Europe and then in the Middle East. And so people were going, wait a minute, what's going on? And then, of course, Americans being the way we are, we said, well, that's somebody else's problem. It's not coming to America.
Yeah, we are very short-sighted. We're wonderful people with innovation and ambition, but a little bit short-sighted. So, and frankly, to be honest with you, the last few viruses, similar kind of viruses, coronaviruses and others, they didn't last very long. Zika, SARS, MERS, et cetera. So there was logic to even people within these companies, Pfizer executives internally, weren't all that concerned. So we have to give credit to the people that were concerned and threw themselves into developing the vaccine. But it's understandable why the rest of us were a little bit complacent.
It sounds also, at least in the book, when I read it, it would almost sounded a little bit like during World War II, when some of these government agencies or some of these companies that were used to making certain kind of supplies all of a sudden were making things for the war effort. And so,
yeah. It wasn't all out war. I mean, I compare it a little bit to maybe the Manhattan Project. We have super smart scientists, all kind of interesting and quirky, focusing on one goal. And the interesting thing is that these companies, they were competing. They all wanted to be the first ones, but they were also kind of rooting for each other, because if one of them had created a vaccine that had awful side effects, let's say, people would be even more scared of it to take the vaccine, any vaccine. So it was a weird dynamic. They were rooting against each other and very much rooting for each other at the same time.
Gregory, can you give us some information as far as if people want additional information about your book, about you, or some of the other books that they can go to online?
Sure. I do have a website, gregoryzuckerman.com, but I instead really encourage people to email me, gregory.zuckerman@wsj.com. I'm a reporter at the Wall Street Journal. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. I love to hear people's thoughts about the book. I mean, after they read A Shot to Save the World, there's always interesting, constructive thoughts that people have, and I encourage them to reach out to me after reading the book.
Gregory, thank you so much.
Oh, it was a lot of fun.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Sam Cassiano. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sines.